Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Geektown Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host Dave Elliott, and on this episode I'm chatting with VFX supervisor of Folks VFX, Philip Thibault, to chat about his recent work on the Disney Plus series The Mysterious Benedict Society, along with a number of his other projects. Based on the best-selling book series of the same name, The Mysterious Benedict Society follows a group of gifted orphans who are recruited by an eccentric benefactor to go on a secret mission. With the fandom surrounding this book series already strong, Philip and his team at Folks VFX worked hard to bring this amazing world to life with the utmost respect to the fans and the source material. The VFX work on this particular series is seamless and invisible, though a lot of complex CG work went into building the world. For example, there's one unconventional and imaginative town built entirely digitally, and Philip and his CG team researched and developed new tools to help create the vast environment of immeasurable detail and complexity. CG backgrounds, CG animals, and other digital enhancements of the locations are also used to help bring the world to life. Philip is a founding partner and senior VFX supervisor of Folks VFX. With over 15 years' experience in the industry, he has a burning passion for his work and infuses it into everything he undertakes. Philip has an impressive film and television list of credits that include the beloved Shadowhunters, Motherland Fort Salem, 12 Monkeys, and the Mission Impossible film series. He also worked on Amanda Tapping's TV show Sanctuary, which we discuss in the interview as well, as it was way ahead of its time when it came to VFX work. If you'd like to hear more behind-the-scenes interviews, don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcast by searching for Geektown Radio. This also gives you our weekly Geektown Radio podcast, which brings you all the latest TV, film and gaming news. You can also go to the website at geektown.co.uk for daily news stories and all the latest UK and US TV premiere dates. The Mysterious Benedict Society is out now on Disney Plus. However, this interview was conducted before the series was released, so it is completely spoiler free. Here's the interview with VFX supervisor of Folks VFX, Philip Thibault.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Thank you for spending a little bit of time to chat with me about your work. Before we get into talking about specifics about the shows, do you just want to give me a little bit of background about how you got into the industry in the first place?
Yes, for sure. I mean, my background is a bit different than most. I started in the early 2000s working in VFX. And before that, I was a professional athlete and my career was not going so well. And my best friend happened to be owning a VFX place in Vancouver, BC. And he asked me if I wanted to try something else. And I did. And it went really, really well. 2.5 years later, I got nominated for an Emmy. And I discovered a new thing, a new passion. I've always been good with photos and art, you know, but never made it or use it as a career, you know. For me, it was a perfect medium to express myself. And I guess the background I have from other things made me a pretty good leader in that industry. And, you know, I graduated from a comp artist, comp supervisor, then VFX supervisor. advisor, and here I am doing a cool show. And the person who introduced me to this work, Sébastien Bergeron, who's the co-founder of Folks With Me, you know. So we both moved back to Montreal with the purpose of opening our own company. And here we are, A Studios all over the world. Now we're partner with Fuse, we're partner with Rising Sun Pictures, and things are going well. It's been a fun ride. It's been a long ride already. I can't believe it, you know, and things are going well for Folks, Fuse, and it's such a fun job, I have to say. You know, every day is like a new challenge, and we have so many incredible artists, and it's just a fun things to do, you know. I feel lucky to talk about demons, yeah, and dragons and blood on the wall. I don't take myself too seriously.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, you've worked on some great shows as well, because you did Shadowhunters and 12 Monkeys, Sanctuary you worked on as well, and Jupiter's Legacy, mm-hmm, I noticed you did a little bit on, and Siren and V-Wars as well recently.
Yeah.
So the Mysterious Benedict Society is the thing that being released on Disney Plus. It's an interesting show, that in the other shows that we've just mentioned, a lot of them, things like Shadowhunters, have really obvious visual effects and stuff flying around and all that sort of thing. With this, it's kind of different because there isn't that many obvious things to it. It's not a big magical superhero series. Fort Salem, no, which is another thing you're on, was that sort of big magic thing.
Yeah.
What did your sort of work involve on that series?
If we all did our job right, nobody's going to mention the VFX and Mr. Benedict, you know? It's incredible, yeah, the spectrum. We have avatars. We recreated one of the actresses. Amy Diaviera is one of the main cast who plays Kate. And we have a version of her that's fully digital. The whole city is fully digital. We even have like underwater world that are fully digital, you know. But hopefully if we played it well and we made it the way we wanted it to be, nobody's going to mention it, because it's not a show that you want the VFX to be the main thing talked about. You know, it's all about the story, the character, and these great books that we are trying to stay true to.
Yeah, it's difficult to talk about this because obviously it hasn't come out yet. And I've seen bits in the trailer and that sort of stuff. So I know one of the things that you built was, that didn't you build an entire town completely digitally in that?
Stone Town, you know, the show was shot in Vancouver. And in Vancouver, you know, there's some older part, you know, like Gastown, and but there's not that much like of an old architecture, you know. And Stone Town obviously is a town that doesn't exist. It's straight from the imagination. And one of the challenges of that show is that there's no real timeline, you know. It's not like a modern time, it's not like an older time. It's a city that had to live in its own world, basically, you know. And you know, we got a little bit of modern stuff, a little bit of older stuff. So there was no real city that we could copy or mimic that would actually make that town. So we were, let's call it, forced to create that city from scratch. And we actually, yes, did like the city, the island, the institute, all of that is created from straight from our imagination. And some of it is based, you know, we try to mix it with some location that we had in Vancouver, you know, but hopefully everything marries like, seamlessly, you know. Like I said, I don't want the VFX to be the main talk when people talk about that show. I'd like it to be just completely out of the conversation, you know what I mean? A bit like it was in Forrest Gump, you know. You don't talk about VFX when you talk about Forrest Gump, you know. You talk about the story, yeah, and how beautiful that is. And I think the show creator and the showrunner did such a good job with the script at being like very true to the story, because you know these books have a huge fan base, so we have to be respectful of that. And in the same sense, we try to be respectful of what was done in the script, what was done in the sets, and the sets are beautiful, and our job was just to be there and make sure we're part of that story, and people just see the VFX as being invisible on this show.
Yeah, which is what you want. I mean, you mentioned the books there, obviously very, very beloved books. It's got to be quite difficult when it comes to doing a TV show, because people will have an imagination of what this location should particularly look like. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about approaching something like that? And are you building this from some real world references and then sort of maybe slightly wilder stuff in there? Just as you say, it's a sort of mishmash of things.
Production designer on that show, Michael Wally, is an absolute reference in that department. He's really, really good at what he does. And I really enjoy working with him. He's very creative, very imaginative. And all the sets he has built for the show are beautiful. you know, and the locations that we choose are also very, very good. You know, like I said, we just try to be doing VFX that are just live in harmony with what was built there or the sets that were there. And if we change anything about the location, it was just to harmonize it to what we were trying to for the story, you know, like we would never ever try to steal the show or make it. But it's still, I feel like we've done a good job in a way that it piques your imagination, but it feels like it sits there with the rest of the show very well, you know. But, you know, there was not that many alteration of what we came up with, you know, like, and the city was built, you know, like obviously we had version that we showed James Boltman and the showrunners Todd and Darren and Phil and Matt and you know, like it was like a sort of a mix of old stuff, you know, new stuff, modern buildings, because it was important for them that the city has its own feel, you know. We have a bit of Bristol in there. We have a bit of Paris in there. We have a bit of Boston in there. You know, we stole things from different beautiful cities in the world that have different style, different colors. And this one is a seaside city. You know, it's almost like an island that this rampart, this place for walking. There's like, there was a lot of work. So much work that was involved in creating that city that we were forced to R&D and invent a way to build that city. Because if we were to do it the more traditional way, we would have run out of time and budget. So we created a software in Folks, you know, based on the software we use. And it was like we could choose a style, choose the window, choose some chimney, and then populate the whole area. We made it like in 231 different districts, and each district has a little bit of his personality. And then the surrounding of the city is the one that's more inspired by the known city of Paris, the known city of Bristol and Boston, you know, because we wanted to have like some variety in there, you know. So the whole thing came out together nicely, I feel. And you'll see in the shot that we have at the opening that like we start with the CG city and then we transition into a street from Vancouver, you know, and feels pretty seamless. And then again, in the city itself of Vancouver, Michael Wally and his team did a good job of changing things to make it more Stone Town. And then on top of their work, we changed some signs. We did what we could do digitally to make it look a little bit more like Stone Town as well. Good times.
Yeah, developing the whole new tool almost sounds like you're building something that you'd almost use in a sort of city builder video game where you could like select elements of sort of what exactly you need to look like, and then just sort of like build up. That's crazy.
But you don't want it to look like a video game. You do want it to look like real life.
Absolutely. Outside of just the crazy amount of detail you're putting into the town itself, I know there were other sort of CG things you were doing. You did some animals as well for this.
Yeah, there's a falcon involved in that story. You know, that's quite important. I'm not going to say what the falcon does or anything about it. But like, yeah, there was a life unused for like some close-up and some... you know, but you know, with animals, it always seemed a good idea to film them, but they don't always collaborate. I have to say that falcon, that live falcon was really, really good on set. And they did some amazing shots with the falcons, but there was a few times that we had to recreate that falcon to help the story, to make it fly in a certain way on certain shots. And sometimes we just needed the falcon and we had him in there, you know. Hopefully you won't notice when it's the digital one and it's the real live one. Other than that, digitally, what we had to do that was quite fun was, like I said, we did Kate, one of the main characters. You know, she used to be, I don't know if that's going to be saying too much, but she used to be to perform before. The performance were quite spectacular. I don't want to give too much details, but instead of having that done by a stunt person, we did it digitally and we switched a room with the real person. That worked out pretty well as well, you know. Because of COVID, there was also a time where we needed like a big audience. And obviously there's no big audience possible right now. So we did like a digital audience mix with some footage that looked pretty good as well. Yeah. What else did we do that was super cool? There's an underwater part that I'm not going to give you any details about, but that was quite a fun environment to build, you know, and what happened there is also pretty cool. That's why for us as a VFX house and for me as a VFX supervisor, it was an incredibly fun show, because although it was not supposed to be a VFX show, there was all kinds of VFX involved, and it got our imagination and our creativity going, flowing, our creative juice flowing quite a bit, you know?
Yeah, there is another character which, having seen the trailer for it, Tony Hale's character, who plays the titular Mr. Bennett on it, they mentioned he has a brother who is obviously also played by Tony Hale in the thing, yeah. From what I can see. Presumably, there may be a point where either these two characters meet or are on screen at the same time. I don't know that because obviously I haven't seen the show. Talking around it without getting anybody into trouble, you've probably done situations where you have character duplications on screen before. How is that dealing with that? Is that quite an easy process at this point because that's an issue that's been around for a while, or is that still quite complicated to deal with?
There's parts that we did that was very simple because you can simply shoot place, and the show being a very static show, you know, the camera's not moving much. It's a wide lens. So there was a lot of scenes that we shot that it was easy to use both character, you know, because you could shoot the plate with one, shoot the other plate with one, and just do what we call a standard split screen. The fun begins when they interact with each other. That's where you need to be creative, yes. And find ways to shoot it so it doesn't help you. We even experimented with deep fake, you know, like that popular AI science, you know.
Really?
And it worked out quite remarkably for some shot. Another shot, well, we had to do the full remove of the head and put the other head back on without giving you too much details. It worked out really well because we shot some good elements and we did it the more traditional way. We were not able to, you know, it's not the kind of show where we do like a full digital face avatar and you can have a close up to it. We would not have time to create that model to that accuracy. And that's not what the show is about either. You know, we went around that and find ways to shoot it and use what we shot, kind of mix it. Some of the shots were more trickier than others, but I think overall in the end, we're very happy with the result. And so is the showrunner. We're very happy with what we did. And, I don't think you've been noticing that it's the same actor.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see it because I love Tony Hale. And the fact that there may be two of him in this show, I think he's going to be wonderful to see.
He's an incredible actor, so professional, very nice to be around, you know. Obviously, with COVID, that's probably the show on set where you have interacted the least with actor because we are trying to get out of the way. And especially at the beginning with COVID, you have the visor, you have the mask, you have the zone. It was very challenging. Production did great to manage that, but like there was no interaction between the VFX guys and the actors. Sometimes on the show you get closer to the cast, but this one, not because they're not nice, they all seem super nice, but we left them in their own bubble. You know, the last thing you want is one of them to get COVID and then production stop. And it was already very complex to run a show like that. I don't want to be the one who does that. You know, like they did production did an awesome job, you know, getting all the shots and getting making the days. And because of COVID, it was shorter hours. And because they're kids, it's shorter hours, which also increases the challenges of getting your days and all the shots, you know. So we did the French hours, which is quite enjoyable when you work on set, I have to say, shorter days, you know. But everybody on that show, involves that show, is really good and really fun, very much fun to work with. The DP, François Dagenet, did an incredible job, you know. And everybody is a bit inspired also by the Wes Anderson style colors and camera moves. You know, there was always like that symmetry that we're looking for, you know, and I think it's been well achieved. And I think people are going to enjoy watching that series very much, you know, as much as the people who read the book and the newcomers, you know, that we're going to attract, hopefully. And but you're right. I can't wait to see the people that really know the stories and add these books in their head for years, you know, so that their word, you know, know, it's fully imagined. Now we have put some image on that, and hopefully it stayed true to the story and what they had in their mind. You know, it's always a challenge.
Yeah, I really hope they like it, because from the little bits I've seen, it looks wonderful. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing it. One of your older shows that we did briefly mentioned earlier that you also worked on, but I wanted to just touch on it a little bit, Sanctuary, which I loved, as I thought that was a wonderful show, which, I mean, actually got you an Emmy nomination, I think.
Yes,
for some of the work on that. Yeah. One of the things that I found from your point of view particularly interesting about that is it was shot almost entirely on green screen, from what I remember.
Yes, it was.
There was very, very little set. So how was the experience of working on a show like that back then? Because, I mean, technology like this moves on so dramatically, so quickly. And so dealing with a show like that back then, how was that?
You became, as a compositor, I became really good at keying, and I became really good at reusing the same background to do 40 shots, you know? It's like repurposing one thing and corner pin it, you know. Obviously, we didn't have the budgets to do full CG environment for all the scenes, you know. Like, there was things that was matte painting, there was things that was 2D matte painting. But my partner in crime, Sebastian, did a wonderful job creating like a pipeline for that show, you know, because the color correct was also inside. It was like that one of the first show to be fully digital, even like for like copies, and he could tell you more about this, but it was you're right, it was ahead of its time for sure, you know. And it's funny because I work this year with Amanda Tapping again on Motherland.
Oh, brilliant. Right. Yeah, of course, I've forgotten about that. Yeah,
she's the producing director this year on Motherland. She's a fantastic person. And yeah, as an artist, it was fun because you had to kind of be, all right, I got this and I got this much time, let me find a way to get this done as fast as I can and as best as I can, and then move on to the next episode, you know. And I think we did really good. I don't know if it aged that well. I'd like to watch it again. I haven't seen any of this in so long.
Yeah,
you know?
I haven't seen it recently. I would be interested to see that. I mean, it's one of those things that you're now at a situation where you have shows like The Mandalorian and the fourth season of Star Trek as well, actually, of Star Trek Discovery, are both using a volume, you know, which is the virtue for those listening that don't know it. That's the sort of virtual digital space that has kind of replaced the green screen to a certain extent. Something like that for something like Sanctuary would have, I mean, essentially Sanctuary is almost a kind of very basic precursor to what they've ended up doing with The Mandalorian, or what you wished you could have done back then, I guess.
Yes. Yeah. The big difference, you know, that, and maybe the misconception about the virtual projection, I really like it. Like you said, it's replacing the green screen with a live image, you know, which is fantastic, you know, because you get the proper light, you get the proper interaction, proper reflection, you know, on the Mandalorian hat and head. I'm sure that, you know, if they had just green screen, the whole thing is so reflective, it would have been like a lot of work just to erase what you don't want to see. And I'm sure they still have some work to do, but the light itself is great, you know. But the prep for these to be achieved is huge, is enormous, you know, like to be able to get on the shoot day and have what you need in the background, there's a lot of prep time involved, which is most of the time not the reality on a lot of the shows we work on, you know. You get the script a couple of weeks before, you know, and the script changes as you shoot. If you want to be using other things than green screen and do the virtual projection, it's totally possible, but the prep time needs to be thought differently. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, the approach needs to be different.
Flips it.
Yeah.
Flips it, because you've got to have those environments built prior to you shooting.
Exactly.
Because the background moves with the camera. So they need to be able to build those 3D environments in a way.
Absolutely.
That they're there beforehand. So
you hear about our Real Engine, but Real Engine is not magic. You know, you still need to create these worlds. You know, it's like, it's not like a button, like, I want some rocks there. And obviously, when it's created, it's super flexible and you can move around and it's extraordinary, but it still has to be, all right, this is what we want, this is what we're going to do, this is what we're going to use, and what do you think about that? And, you know, and then you can change the sun throughout and it's working, but it's not like on the day off, all right, let's have some rocks, you know. It's like, you know, it's a super cool way to work, and I think it's coming to be the way to work, you know, on many of the shows that have the budget to do so. I'm very excited to move towards that technology, but there's still things that we need to learn learn and improve to be able to do that on any shows, you know, because it's still an expensive technology, yeah. Which Mandalorian doesn't have problems.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. As I say, I mean, Mandalorian's got one at the moment. I know because I spoke to the guys that are doing Discovery and I know they're using one on Discovery Season 4.
Same things, you know, the budget is there for these guys, you know.
Yeah. I know they've built some in Europe and I think we're getting a volume system set up in the UK in a few studios. So I think it is going to be one of those things. Because the other thing, of course, is with COVID, that sort of virtual environment is probably much more controllable than having to take somebody out into the middle of a wilderness to shoot something
Absolutely. So, you know, the less you have to move the crew, the better, you know, with the COVID world and everything we're facing. So that's one thing the virtual production can totally provide, you know, to bring you to another world quite easily without risking anything. So that's good for productions.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see where that tech goes because I think it is something that's going to make huge changes to the industry.
Absolutely.
Before we head off, is there anything else you want to mention?
I can honestly say that everybody has done the work in all due respect to the books and then the fan base that already exists. You know, I feel like it was always a very important part of the conversation when we were creating. And I'm sure in the writer's rooms with Todd, Darren, Phil and Matt, it was the same. You know, I think they've done a wonderful job as staying true to the books, respecting the story and the fans, you know, as well as maybe there's going to be a few surprises, you know. And overall, it was a fantastic experience. I'm hoping for more season and more years to come working on that show because it's a fantastic world. And the showrunners, Todd and Darren, are incredible people to work for. You know, like they're super creative, super open-minded. And same thing for Phil and Matt. And the whole team there is, for me, it's the dream team. And post-supervisor is a very good friend of mine, Mark Kahn. He's an extraordinary person as well. You know, like it was for me, it was like the Shadow Hunter family back together almost, you know, we've done 42 episodes together. So it was a lot of, of hours. And then when we reunited for that show, it was the best for me. It's the dream team back together, basically.
You know, what's weird. I was looking through the shows that you worked on when I was prepping for the interview. I interviewed Catherine McNamara literally last week about a film she's got coming up.
Nice. Yeah. I love Cat. So, Cat Kitty Cat. Yeah, yeah.
She's lovely. Yeah.
She's lovely. Yeah. She was an incredible person to be around on set, you know, so much energy, so much talent. All the cast on Shadowhunter was like so much fun to be around. And when you get to do 42 episodes with a cast like this and hours and like the days were so long sometimes and at night and yeah, we got to know each other pretty well.
Yeah.
And Kat is very, very, very cool person.
She's got a film out at the moment, which is actually written by Luke Baines.
No way.
Also from Shadowhunters.
No.
So,
I didn't know that. That's so cool.
It's really funny, actually. If you go to untitledhorror.com, it's called Untitled Horror Movie.
Okay.
Go to untitledhorror.com and there'll be a trailer up there for it and stuff. But it's got Luke Baines and Catherine McNamara from Shadowhunters, Claire Holt from Vampire Diaries, Emmy the Raven Lampman from Umbrella Academy, Darren Barnett and Tim Graderos, I think his name is from 13 Reasons Why in there. But Luke actually wrote it with Nick Simon.
Luke Bain wrote it. That's awesome.
It's a kind of comedy horror. It was all shot during the pandemic in their own homes with them doing all their own lighting, their own filming, their own makeup, everything.
I love it.
And it's done on a series of kind of Zoom calls. And the idea is that these actors accidentally summon a demon while they're writing and prepping this horror movie. And there's bits of them shooting themselves on their phones and that sort of thing.
That's so cool. I didn't hear from Zoom calls. I'm glad you talked about it. I'm going to reach out to these guys.
Go reach out to them because it is really funny. It's a wonderful little project that they've kind of put together and I think they're sort of self-publishing it, I think on the website and stuff, but it's worth going to look at. It is very funny.
Excellent. I like it.
Last couple of questions for you. First question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
I just finished watching Billions, which I thought was really good.
I love that show.
Can't wait. So did it release released the last few episodes of the last season. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to watch the movie with lots of VFX too. Sometimes, you know, like they're not as good as I'd like them to be. But I just watched Army of the Dead and I thought the VFX were pretty well done, actually, you know, so on Netflix, you know, there was it was a fun, fun stuff.
It must be difficult watching some VFX stuff when you're working in the industry as well, particularly if they're not done particularly well, or maybe if they are done really well, and then it sort of gets in your brain of like, oh, I wonder how they did that.
No, for sure. I enjoy watching the heavy VFX movie, although I haven't done any myself. I've been watching recently all the Mission Impossible with my son, you know, and because I worked one of them, and it got cool. All pretty well, actually, you know, I was pretty happy with that.
Yeah. And last question for you, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, can be something historical from the past, something present day, or some sort of future genre that maybe you haven't had a chance to play around in yet, what would it be?
It has to be a TV show.
Go on, I'll let you have a film.
I would love to be involved in the next Forrest Gump, if such thing can exist.
Yeah.
No, I really enjoy working with the magic stuff and doing like the crazy visual effect with creatures and stuff. But I truly enjoy working on a show like Mr. Benedict, you know, because the VFX are really part of the story and invisible to most people. And that's for me is a really good challenge, you know. It's like adding a creature there is super fun, you know, and it's great and it looks fantastic and it's fun to do as well. But doing VFX that are invisible for me is always something I enjoy, like historical piece or one series in particular. I don't know, to be honest. That's a tough one. But I would say Forrest Gump would be the next Forrest Gump would be something I would love to be involved with. And yeah. I stole that from Sebastian, because Sebastian, I've learned a lot from, and who got me my chance is there. That's his favorite VFX movie. And I sort of copied that from him, because you're right, it is a fantastic VFX movie. And, you know, in a way that nobody mentioned the VFX in Forrest Gump, you know?
Yeah, right. I will let you get back to your day. Thank you for spending some time to chat with me. It's been really fun, and hopefully we'll get to talk in the future, maybe when the season 2 comes out.
Absolutely. All right,
lovely chatting with you. Hopefully speak again soon.
I enjoyed it very much. Cheers. Bye-bye. Bye.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.